Hello and welcome. Scare Track. Scare Track Podcast.
Welcome to the Scare Track Podcast, the UK's first podcast dedicated to the scare attraction and haunted house industry. However, please be advised that we have no censor. The language used may be of an explicit nature and is not intended for younger listeners or the easily offended. All views expressed are those of the individual host and do not necessarily reflect those of Scare Track, our guests, or any of our associates. So, if you're still here, let's get scared.
So this is where our adventure begins.
Oh my God!
I'm scared myself!
Faith Monroe is screaming.
Spoiler alert,
freaking awesome.
That's the loudest I've heard you scream. Very long time.
Quality of the set was amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like it. But he's too buff to be real.
Hello and welcome to episode 135 of the Scare Track Podcast. My name is Mikey and today's episode is an interview episode with scare actor Dan Thorpe. Now, you may know Dan most recently as his character, the Dark Reverend Bloodhusk, in the award-winning Village Scare Attraction at Extreme Scream Park. Extreme Scream Park itself is an award-winning Scream Park for the best Scream Park in the UK, as voted by the Scare Con panel at the Scar Awards a few years ago. So, very big park that has fantastic attractions. The Village, an award-winning attraction itself, and I think Dan should be an award-winning scare actor. He creates such a characterization of each of his characters that he plays at the park, and like I say, most recently, the Reverend Bloodhusk. He creates backstories, poems, he goes into research. He genuinely really does add so many more layers to a scare character than I think so many other actors around the UK, even the world. So I think it was a perfect opportunity to talk to Dan today about how he creates his characters, what he does to basically build and create a terrifying, foreboding creature like Reverend Bloodhusk. We also touch on how he got into scare attractions himself, how he liked horror films as a young child as opposed to the usual kids Disney programs, and we really just generally just talk about his life along with scare acting alongside it. We also speak about some dark times that Dan has managed to get over as such. Dan has had some dark issues with mental health in the past, and he was happy to come onto the show and talk about how he developed these mental health demons and how he's helped to overcome them with the help of friends, family, and of course the scare community. So guys, this is your disclaimer, in the fact that in the latter half of this interview we do go into some quite deep and dark subject matter, so here's your warning. We will do another warning halfway through the episode as well, so guys, if you want to carry on listening but only really hear about the characterization of scare acting and how Dan sort of creates his characters, then please do stick around and take a listen to this episode. If you then wish to not listen to the more a harder subject matter later on in the interview, then we'll do a disclaimer when that's about to start. Guys, we really do hope you stick around for the whole interview, because Dan, he opens his heart out to us and he talks about some real demons that he has had in the past. He's managed to fight them and he's managed to create such a fantastic buzz within the community now, especially when it comes to his fantastic scene at the end of The Village. So was very proud of Dan of being able to come onto the show and talk about his demons of the past and how he's managed to fight them, and we hope that you guys listen and take something from it as well, whether you're just a scare actor wanting to learn more about scare acting or whether you guys have some of your own personal demons that you may need just a little a little chat with someone like Dan who could help you sort of overcome them or help you know that you're not alone with this. But before we go into the interview with Dan, I need to give a huge thank you to our newest Patreon supporters, guys. So a huge thank you to Callum Beckett from Scream Camp, Alan Higginson, Dom Nicholas, Andy Longmore, Sarah Cross, Amber Barrett, and Stephen Dennis, our newest patrons, added to the other sort of five patrons that we had in the first week of launching. So, guys, a huge, huge thank you for supporting the Scare Track podcast on Patreon. Guys, if you want to join us on Patreon, then please do. Just join us at www.patreon.com/scaretrack. You'll be able to see the tiers there, and you'll be able to see all the extra exclusive content that we put on offer for our Patreon supporters. Guys, if you're not able to join us on Patreon, no worries whatsoever. We'll still be churning out these episodes as often and as regular as we can, because we love doing all the different types of episodes for you. Like we say, we have the interview episodes such as today, we have our discussion episodes, and we have our live on location review episodes when we visit Scream Parks and discuss the attractions that we go through. So guys, let's take it to the interview myself and Hannah had earlier today with Dan Thorpe, scare actor.
You're listening to Scare Track.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Scare Track podcast. A little bit different this time. We have a technically an in-studio interview episode, but it's not in studio. We are at a good friend of the show, Dan Thorpe's house. So Dan, welcome to the Scare Track podcast.
Hello.
It's awesome to have you on. First of all, we've had some lovely cake. And we've had some lovely Pepsi Max Cherry. And we've got to meet your gorgeous cat, Ruby. And now we've spoke off air. It's time to talk on air.
Yes.
More about you, about scare acting, about how it sort of helped you develop as a person, and help you defeat some sort of demons that you know you've had in the past. So thought, what better chance than to sort of come and... You're only an hour up the road, so we thought we'd come and say hello to you. So... Most of our listeners will probably know you as Reverend Bloodhusk.
Dark Reverend Bloodhusk.
The Dark Reverend Bloodhusk. Sorry, sir. Sorry, sir.
That's his title.
From Extreme Scream Park in the award-winning Village. And you've played some other characters at Extreme Scream Park, haven't you?
I have played Cedric Damore, the psychopath of Stilton Hall. That was my very first attraction that I'd ever acted in. And this was when we had proper stage auditions at Extreme Scream. And when I turned up to do my audition, I was absolutely terrified, like I cracked a cigarette in half because I was shaking that much. But I went up to the stage and thought, okay, this is it. Just make sure you're remembered. And I actually went up and introduced myself as Cedric Damore and not actually my name, because I was actually dressed in my full character that I had decided. And it was literally just something along the lines, they were like, okay, what's your name? Where have you come from? I was like, I'm rather irritated that unfortunately you don't actually seem to remember me. My name is Cedric Damore. I have come from Stilton Hall. I used to work in Stilton Hall. I was going to make this world so beautiful. And then you trapped me outside. How do you think that makes me feel? This will not do. And it kind of went on like that. And I explained about the character and they absolutely loved it. They originally said they wanted me to be upstairs in a bedroom scene. That didn't happen in the end. And I was then put downstairs. For those that know Stilton, there's a one downstairs. There's a very long pitch black corridor with lots of partition sheets. And there's a room where originally had like a dentist chair thing and all the lights came around on the outside of the room and it was like very, very bright and all of a sudden the lights would go out.
Yes.
That was my room. That was Cedric's room. And I used to use that, the corridor and occasionally the locker room as well. I used to like work in that area. And what happened basically was I remember when Sandy came through and I changed my dialogue somewhat and I started with my usual... Oh, you think you're safe, do you? You know, I killed my mother and father and I even got bored with their screams. So what makes you so sure you're safe? And then all of a sudden I grabbed Sandy.
And Sandy's one of the managers
at
Extreme Scream.
Yeah, one of the managers at Extreme Scream. And I said, you know, you did promise me greatness, my dear, but unfortunately you've trapped me down in this dark corridor. That was a very, very rude and cruel thing to do, especially when I now know this darkness far better than what you do, and even if you wish to run, I will find you.
So if you're a visitor to the park, you're going to get terrified. And if you run the park, you're also going to be terrified by you. Perfect.
Yeah, I'm known for when I'm in character, I am in character, to the point where as soon as the makeup, as soon as the costume goes on, you will not find Dan, you will not speak to Dan, you will speak to my character.
And that's something that we don't obviously often see in scare acting, which is quite nice. You see that in film, in theatre sometimes, as in if someone, I know a few actors play the Joker, you know, famously, Heath Ledger and nearly all of them actually go into method to try and get into that sort of state of mind. And on theatre shows, myself and Hannah come from theatre backgrounds. I know that once the curtain is up, for the next 2 to 3 hours, they are that person. And you don't really see that as such in scare acting. Do you find that sort of helps your characterisation and your sort of the backstory of the character? You can get more into the actor's frame of mind?
Absolutely. When I do my character development, I write poetry, I get a little book and I write lines, ideas for my character. For me, getting soul deep into your character is the best thing that you can do, because when you no longer feel like you're acting and you're actually portraying, not portraying this person, but you are this person, then that is the part where it shows to the guest.
Yeah, of course.
Because they don't see it as a mask and an outfit. Once you start responding to them and you can actually completely off the cuff speak as these characters, then that's the point where they start to question the reality.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things which I did with Bloodhusk was generally, even when I was getting ready, anybody, even the other actors, tried to talk to me, chances are they would get quite a blunt response from Bloodhusk, especially if they looked very human. It wasn't so bad for the people in the Pie Factory because I didn't see them as humanity. So they didn't get so much of a bad treatment, but there were some attractions that I just would not really speak to. And the interesting thing is with Bloodhusk is there was a lot of different sides to him. And you had the calm, collected, well, kind of calm and collected side where he would give his sermon of hate towards humanity. But then I thought, how can I make this character, that bit more intimidating? And I thought, okay, what happens if you can't actually reason with him anymore? Mm-hmm. If I take away being able to actually speak to him. And I was looking at different parts and I found a piece from Fluke de Cassandra at Europa Park.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a part in there it's something like Catalamenina is the olive, the Catalamenia panda nagesti for me, a forma panda for me, a monomistica. To which I changed that to Catalamenina is the olive, the Catalamenia panda nagesti for me.
Very different to Fluke de Cassandra.
Yeah.
And that's, nice.
So that's generally what would happen when it came to the storm side of it. At that point, the beast of Bloodhusk is released. He's no longer going to even treat you in any way of any form of respect. That's completely gone out the window. He wants you dead.
Nice, nice. And if anyone's unsure, obviously the Bloodhusk is basically the finale character of the village attraction at Extreme Extreme Park, which is held at Twin Lakes Family Theme Park. Just in case anyone listeners aren't too sure, they have won multiple awards at the SCARS at ScareCon the last few years. Last year, the village won for Best New Maze. So congratulations on that. And I think the year before, did Extreme win Best Scream Park in the UK Awards?
It wasn't the year where I started. I think it was the year before. I think it was when Ash Hell opened.
Right, I see.
Which should have been 2015.
Something like that, yeah, maybe.
Because it was the infamous year that Simon and Simeon had their double act on the front of the gate, on the front of the door to Ash Hell. And Simeon would draw penises on people's foreheads with permanent marker.
Luckily, I've never had a penis drawn on my forehead. Well, not at Extreme Scream Park, anyway. I have at other places.
Psychomantium?
Maybe so, maybe so. So obviously, you. It's nice to see something fresh when it comes to scare acting, that it's not just putting on a mask and shouting boo, just like any other proper acting role, you research a character, if it's a character given to you, or if you create your own character, you create a backstory, you create a, like you say, poems, and we were listening to some of your poems on the way up here, and it genuinely, it's awesome, and I loved your poem based on your character from Stilton. Not only is the poetry good with great structure and rhymes and whatnot, it actually lets you know a lot of the backstory. So when you're acting as these characters, I'm guessing the backstory is very, very important to you to be able to portray these characters.
Definitely. Stilton, I generally knew the backstory of what was going on there. Sorry. I didn't know if you were taking a picture then.
Oh, sorry.
Hannah's filming us, so...
Oh,
lovely. Lovely. You can check that out on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter.
So, yeah, the thing is, I generally knew what was going on with Stilton. I think the reason I like Stilton is it kind of reminded me a bit of The Sanctuary. It was that kind of...
And The Sanctuary at Orton Towers.
It was that kind of... There was a very dark kind of campness to The Sanctuary in places.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved about Stilton. And it was still that kind of clinical but not... kind of thing. I knew where my character would be coming from Cedric. I knew I wanted something where the reason he went in there was he was put in there pretty much almost from childhood, that he was unstable and like it was mainly kind of done around the era. If you had someone that wasn't really very good and you were in a rich family, you sent them away for a little extended stay. And the idea was that Cedric actually did his own surgery on himself. He actually made himself the way he looked, and he saw that as beautiful.
Right.
With Bloodhusk's backstory is actually a lot... I'd say it's probably actually darker than Cedric's, because the idea was that he began as a farmhand that also worked with the priest in that village. And... when they had the government body that came over to try and create the things that would stop all the pests in the fields, being these genetically made scarecrows, he died during some farming accident. And instead of his body being put into the ground, he was given to Professor Crow.
Right.
And that is why he hates humanity so much, because humanity pretty much screwed him over at the last minute. And the idea where the Seal of the Harvest comes from is that while he was in his transformation stage, he saw this symbol and he saw that as his new life. Yeah. And he wasn't treated very well in any of kind of places in the village. And that's why he went back and he took over the church. He took over that one person that had all the power over.
Right.
And that was where he started.
Wow, there's so much backstory to it, isn't there?
I mean, there's probably more backstory than what the park actually gives.
But it's great because you can. I mean, it means that you open it up to any kind of visitor, really, or anyone enjoying. Because what you're performing is a piece of theatre in front of people, and that's what people sometimes forget, that scare attractions are pieces of promenade theatre that people are just going from room to room and seeing these things act out, and similar to movies, to theatre, to anything. If you just want to go there and see it for what it is, you can. Or you can really listen to what the person's saying and hear more. You're one of these scare actors that just love to give, so they can actually go onto your YouTube channel and listen to more of the backstory when it comes to the poetry of the characters. And if anyone wants to do that, we'll leave a link below in our show notes. And again, people could do that. Say, for example, they're watching a random movie and they're watching this character. Well, actually, if you went on YouTube, they'd be able to give you Easter eggs from other movies. Or if you went onto IMDb, there'd be a synopsis with a character development, you know. And you're doing that for Scaracher, which is great. It's just giving another layer to what some people think is, and again, you're going to, shout out and shout boo. Do you know what I mean? Because some people do think it is genuinely just that.
Don't say art and don't say get out.
Correct. Thank you. Definitely. We need that on a t-shirt.
There is no need for it.
No, definitely. All. Because then it's not realistic. And although all these attractions are escapism and some sort of, not fantasy world as such, but like a, you're going into a attraction that is different to home,
yeah.
You're still bringing an relevance of realness to the attraction and the character.
Yeah. I mean, my the one thing which I has always bugged me about quite a lot of scare attractions, and to be honest, I hate to say this to an extent, even the Sanctuary did this with me as well, was most scare attractions spend 90% of the time building up to this, the worst thing that they can possibly throw at you at mm-hmm. the end. If this is the case, why am I being allowed just to walk out?
Yes.
I want a reason as to why I'm being allowed to walk out. The whole point, why what I like to have, like I like to see with the village, was the fact that Bloodhusk can't leave his church. He can't actually leave the village. Right. And that's why he gives you to his executioner, the very last person that you'll see. But he's completely off his head. So it's not surprising that he doesn't catch you, because he's probably too busy screaming at the wall or something.
Yes, yes.
But it's like
even the walls that he's literally climbing.
Yes, it's like even with the Sanctuary, you had all of those things saying don't go downstairs and all the rocks and everything else, and then you got through the strobe maze, and then it was just a big open door at the end. It was like, okay, out you go.
Yeah, and it's like, you're right. It's like that in many attractions, and that's even chainsaw rooms. So like, there's the exit. Go on.
Yeah, that's what I do not like. That's the one part in scare attractions that I really pay the most attention to,
mm-hmm.
and I want that that finale needs to not just be that final scare, but the actual culmination of what that experience was and as to why you're being allowed to leave.
Of course.
So yeah, I mean that's just
absolutely. I mean it just gives more more meaning to it, so yeah. You know,
it doesn't seem as threatening when you realize you can just walk away from what been trying to get you,
whereas if there's a reason for leaving, it adds more depth to a finale, I guess.
Definitely.
So let's talk about a little, let's rewind x amount of years,
yes.
and find out on how you have got to this this stage in your life, because we've actually only met really the last year or so. The first year we met you as
Bloodhusk.
Bloodhusk, and then obviously you went to your first ScareCon last year as well. That's how we got to know you that little bit more.
First ScareCon is never your last.
No, correct. Yeah. Once you go ScareCon, you don't go back. And obviously now you're a member of Park Scares and Glitter, and we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. So you just you've integrated yourself within the scare community rather quickly, and already it seems probably like a second home. To you. So let's start back years and years ago. As a child, were you into horror? I mean, I'm looking around your beautiful home now and I'm seeing so many sort of tarot cards and everything on the when it comes to the walls.
I have 81 tarot decks.
81 tarot decks.
Yes.
Jeez. And you've got obviously special skulls and stars. And I mean, obviously the listeners can't see what's here, but tell us a little bit about the background of sort of your beliefs and how those sort of created the actor that you are today.
Okay. I think I properly started getting into horror, and it sounds really bad, when I was probably about 12.
Hannah watched Hellraiser at 6 years old. So
I commend you.
Bad parents, bad parents.
Good parents.
That's exactly what she said.
Prove that the world is not pleasant early. Yeah, I think my first proper horror film may have been Children of the Corn.
Okay.
Which is not really the best one for a child to see, because it's literally children killing their parents.
Lovely.
But Isaac Croner was one of my inspirations for Bloodhusk. So I really liked Children of the Corn, and I started watching things like I Know What You Did Last Summer,
mm-hmm.
and I think I actually watched Scream 2 before the first one.
Of course.
So it was really that kind of 90s slasher era that kind of got me into it.
Okay.
Because I was never, I mean, Hannah, you're going to hate me for this.
Hannah's poorly in a corner, by the way, so you might hear a little bit.
I've never been that much of a fan of Disney.
It's all right. Well, you have just bought Cards Against Disney, and I think Hannah just, and Hannah, you just bought Disney a Belle costume.
Wedding dress.
Yeah, there is that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I hate non-Disney fans.
We say that. She has a voodoo doll at home. So you've never been a fan of Disney as such. So you didn't really watch the Disney classics growing up, like most.
I like Lion
kids.
King.
Okay.
Because it's not.
Because there's death and the dad dies.
It's because it doesn't show that a kid's role model is that if you're a girl, you have to be stupidly pretty and rich, and the only thing that you can amount to is waiting for a man. Yeah, for a man to come along and sweep you off your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And
which. Back in, like you say, the night as we were growing up, all the relevant Disney princesses were doing that, waiting for a guy to sweep them off their feet. Yeah, good point.
So I like Hocus Pocus. I'll give them that. But I like Lion King, but I really got drawn more into horror, and I'd always been slightly kind of more interested in the darker kind of things, and. It eventually came to me doing, it was, I'd say probably when I was about 17, 18, I was known in my hometown when Halloween would come round that I would always dress up, and it was quite dark dress. I mean, I remember when I went into a pub in 2008, I literally made it look like I'd been shot 3 times.
Oh, wow.
And the blood was very, very realistic. It was very dark. It was still wet and dripping.
Nice.
And I literally ran into this pub and just screamed, "Somebody help me."
Oh, my days.
Fell to the floor.
What?
Waited for everything to go quiet.
Did you get arrested?
No, I just stood and went, "Happy Halloween. Who's going to buy me a drink?"
Wow. Now, me and Hannah live in a pub. If that happened, you'd be barred. Jeez. But again, that method acting, eh, Dan? So it started early.
Yeah, and then I started looking at, because I was on Towers Times Forum, I was looking at the different scare attractions in the past from Towers, and I remember one of the first ones I read about, I think, was Field of 1,000 Screams.
Right, yeah. Which, we were never lucky enough to go through that.
It looked so interesting. That bus finale, from what I heard, was unbelievably terrifying.
Definitely.
And then it was in, when would it have been? It would have been the year after the Sanctuary had opened and the Smiler was delayed.
2013.
Yeah. And my partner at the time said, okay, for your birthday, we'll go to Alton Towers, and then you can do the Sanctuary if you want to go and do it. So off I toddled, 10 o'clock in the morning, wandering down my own into my first scare attraction, which was the Sanctuary. And literally, I walked out. When I got to the other end, I was absolutely just hooked. I was like, I need to go back in again.
Yeah.
I need to go back in again.
And was this when, because obviously the Smiler was delayed, so they kept the maze open for the first couple of months, didn't they? We did the same thing. We went there, and rather than ride any rides, we just kept going through the Sanctuary again, again, and again. It was fantastic.
Because obviously it was in that snowy March, it was smaller groups. I think my first group was a group of four, and
nice.
I was at the front.
Yeah.
So that was my baptism of fire into scare acting.
First experience. It's all downhill after the Sanctuary, I'm afraid. But no, it was a quality attraction.
But
definitely.
I noticed that the 2013 March version seemed to be actually slightly more aggressive and dark than what the Scarefest version was.
True.
But I went along to Scarefest and I made this huge outfit of being an advocate of the Ministry of Joy. I had my black boots, I had my bright yellow rave trousers, I had suit jacket, yellow tie,
nice.
And a full cut-up face. And I had loads of different, like, Smiler badges and all sorts. It was, like, cosplay to the max.
Nice.
To an extent where guests actually thought that I was a roaming actor.
I bet, yeah.
Which
probably
was great
better
fun.
Than half of them, yeah.
Jerry Candle, obviously Dr. Kelman, made a point of noting the fact that I had a Smiler badge on me. And was not impressed. He started shouting at me, saying it was the wrong form of marmalization. And then we went on to the Smiler. And when I came off, I got pulled to the side by the Smiler staff. And they gave me a post-it note and a little card. And it said, "The Ministry of Joy appreciates your correction," and gave me an unlimited fast pass for the Smiler.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good. Let's get some yellow wellies.
And it said, "For one Ministry of Joy, your guest."
Wow, that's really cool.
I also, obviously, that year got introduced into Terror of the Towers, which I can't forgive them for removing. Terror of the Towers was beautiful.
It was a staple of Alton Towers Scarefest, definitely. I think it needed some more updates throughout the years.
It needed more updates. But, it did need more updates.
It has been missed.
The last incarnation, you could kind of tell that they had hidden, like where they hadn't had stuff built in, they'd just kind of tried to put smoke and maybe a sheet.
Yes.
And that was a bit obvious. And then it was also that year that I did it. I, for some strange reason, I decided to book into Extreme Sanctuary.
Nice.
Yeah. And I actually went in. This is where I met Gareth Jones, obviously from Towers as well.
Yeah.
Extreme Sanctuary was an eye opener, to say the least. It was such a good experience. And I thought, okay, maybe I can handle a bit more. And then after that, it was like every year, got to go back to Scarefest, got to go back to Scarefest. Still haven't been properly to Fright Nights, so I apologise on that one. I will have to try some of theirs, but the unfortunate thing is, Vulcan Peaks there.
Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, sorry, I had to mention that.
It's all right, they know how we feel about that. They feel the same, I've heard, good old Thorpe Park. So obviously you sort of started like in horror as an early age, and then your first scare attraction. So you could probably say thank you to the Smiler for being delayed for your first visit to the sanctuary. And was it sort of a hook from then? It was sort of like you need to do more, and that's how you found Extreme Scream Park and how you got into scare acting from that. Have you always been into acting, or is it something new that you've sort of developed?
When I was at school, I did more art things. I wasn't that confident at all. I ended up doing some amateur dramatics, which my nan was also part of, and my partner at the time was as well. And that I actually really did enjoy, but I always wanted to do a darker character or something with more depth. And the year that, Ash Hell opened, 2015 at Extreme, I went as a guest. And that was actually with my partner at the time, went along. He'd never done a scare attraction before. So I thought, you know, this will be interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't tell him that they could touch you. So I thought,
I'm sure he loved you after that.
This will be interesting. It was obviously the year that I think The Hunted might have been new.
Right, okay. And that was there for only 1 year, wasn't it?
So was it one? It might. No, it
might have been two.
It was two.
Right,
it was 2 years.
Because that was the sort of part hooded, part non-hooded towards the end.
It was. What happens if you merge hoods with a very kind of Tory aspect? Because they were all in riding coats and they were all being really, you know, we're so much better than you.
Yeah, kick
the beggar.
Yeah, it was kind of like being looked down upon, wasn't it? And we were being hunted by them, sort of thing. Yeah, I get what you mean.
And obviously that's where I found Extreme Scream. Absolutely adored Stilton at the time. And
Stilton was, I think, at the time, one of the longest scare attractions in the UK at 52 rooms on two levels. It really was probably one of the game changers to the UK scare industry.
It's a huge attraction. I mean, obviously, because I've worked in there. The actors' runs are so small.
Right.
The rooms are so close together, but you would never even notice.
Yeah.
I mean, it now makes me think, having gone through Man of Mortis, on how close their stuff must be together. It can be a difficult one to navigate, especially if you try and walk around when your phone dies in the middle of the day and you're doing it in the dark.
I bet.
When I met my... sounds really bad, I keep mentioning exes. My most recent, not recent ex, because the most recent one was a lying, cheating scum. But the one before that, his friend Marcus Andrews, he's been at Extreme Scream, and I met him, and he said, "So you've been to Extreme?" I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "How have you feel about being on the other side of it?" I was like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Actually acting in it."
Yeah.
So he was the one that actually got me into doing my audition.
Okay.
And literally from there on, it kind of just spiraled on from there.
Yeah.
And
so it started off sort of by accident as such.
Yeah, to be honest.
And then it's turned into such, not even you just going there, turning up and putting a mask on and shouting, get out and boo. It's actually turned into you creating a proper character. And
from my first year in Stilton, I went from my first year in Stilton, first ever year of scare acting, to being put in the finale of the headline attraction of the next year.
Yeah.
So that was a very proud moment.
Absolutely, definitely.
Of me. It was great to actually spend the time I did that summer seeing how things were built and building a lot of things in the village. Also did some work on voodoo, second half of the bridge.
You've not only acted in the attractions, but you've helped build part of these attractions. Absolutely. Blood, sweat and tears.
There's my blood in Stilton.
Okay, well.
There was an area where there's pictures, like really horrible pictures up, and it was like they had like a flasher scene. It's like a pervert scene. And I was literally in there in not very good lighting, and I was cutting up these bits, and I slipped with a pair of dressmaking scissors.
Whoops.
It's right across my hand. Ooh, and I thought, oh, well.
Oh, well.
Just flick
it. Oh, well, oh, well.
I'll leave my mark on here.
Authentic, definitely.
Yeah, so it's definitely, there is actually blood in there.
Awesome, awesome. So you've gone from, obviously, enjoying horrors more so than the normal kid stuff when you were younger. Yeah. And then you obviously found The Sanctuary, which... And again, I think that was... that's a lot of people who listen to this podcast or know us as well, myself and Hannah, now my wife, and our friendship group. Although we know Scare Attractions have been around a lot longer, and we've been through attractions before The Sanctuary, The Sanctuary did become... one of those sort of staple attractions that if you ask most enthusiasts, they're going to go, yeah, The Sanctuary did it for me. That really got me hooked. And that, of course, Orton Towers Resort, if you're not in the UK, guys, that's one of the biggest theme parks here in the UK. Home to the likes of Nemesis, our first ever B&M inverted coaster. The first ever dive coaster, Hannah's snoring now. Okay, for any of our American listeners out there, Orton Towers is basically where they do all the prototypes. So B&M dive coasters, we got the first one. B&M flying coasters, we got the first one. Intamin drop draw coat. Hannah's looking at me like concerned now. I'm talking about this because...
it's fine.
We're geeking out on Orton Towers. Anyway, The Sanctuary... The Sanctuary was... No, we're talking about Sanctuary. Go back to sleep. So the Sanctuary is one of those sort of staples when it comes to a lot of, I think, fans within the industry as such.
You're listening to
So, guys, here is your second disclaimer. If you wish to carry on with this episode, please be aware that myself and Dan do talk about some rather sad and disturbing themes moving forwards. Some listeners may find distressing, and it may not be suitable for certain ears. So, guys, if you feel that you do not wish to move forward in hearing Dan's story, then that's completely understandable. And a huge thank you for listening to this episode of the Scare Trap Podcast, and we hope we hear you on the next one. If you do wish to stay with the podcast now, then like I say, guys, we do touch on some subjects that you may find distressing, but please be rest assured that Dan is now in a far better place, and he is the fun-loving scare actor that we all know and love today. So if you wish to carry on with this episode, excellent, and we'll continue with the interview with Dan Thorpe.
You're listening to Scare Trap.
So I know you sort of touched on this with Hannah when at ScareCon, and I was too drunk to fathom how to use the microphone, and Hannah managed it on the second or third occasion of being able to press the big red button, meaning it's on. But we know, and I know we spoke off air, that you don't mind chatting about this, and some of the listeners might be able to sort of get some sort of guidance, some sort of help, and some sort of reassurance and some a soothing thought that you've obviously like you're a real person. You're not always a blood husk. You're not always this crazy fun loving guy with a handful of exes going through scare attractions and getting drunk with us at ScareCon. But you're a real person as well, and I know that sort of the friendship groups you've created out of scare attractions and becoming an actor has sort of helped you with past sort of demons. Are you happy to sort of explain on how that maybe started and how it progressed and how you sort of come out the other side, sort of, you know, kicking and screaming, putting your middle finger up to sort of mental health issues?
Yeah. I suppose the easiest way to start this off is by saying that I actually owe a lot. When I say I owe a lot to the scare industry, it's actually I owe my life to the scare industry.
Wow.
This is going to probably get a bit controversial now, but
that's
hey,
okay.
Hey ho, you know, you're not censored, so it's fine. I've not had the easiest growing up life. I've been through a lot of bad experiences.
Mm-hmm.
The main one is at the age of around 16, 17. I was groomed and eventually raped by a paedophile.
Wow.
And that played on my mind for a long time. I actually went through a process of believing that I was happy with what he did. Then I went through feelings of deserving, so saying that I deserved what happened to me. And I kind of put it to the back of my head and I tried not to let it bother me. I went through a lot of battles of self-harm mm-hmm. as well. And then when it got to about 2016, my mental health went very, very rapidly down the pan.
Of course, yeah.
Really quite bad. To the point where it was pretty much the starting of where I am now and what I have to deal with now. Because, you know, I'm not ashamed to say I have rapid cycling, bipolar 2 and borderline personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But what I will say is just because you have these conditions, do not ever think and do not let anyone ever say that you cannot be a scare actor and you cannot work in this industry, because you can. As long as you know in yourself, you know the triggers, then you can do it.
And you can do whatever you set your mind to.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Exactly. So basically, I was put on a certain medication, and it's not for people with bipolar, but I kept telling them it's not depression I have. I said I have highs as erratic as the lows, and they wouldn't believe me. So they put me on this medication called venlafaxine, and you do not give it to anyone with bipolar. It's dangerous. Within 2 weeks, I was at work and I literally just walked out the store one shift and ended up just sat in the middle of a road,
wow.
completely unaware of really what I was doing. And bit by bit, more of these kind of episodes kept happening. And then they ended up upping my dose, which within 3 or 4 weeks, I was planning my suicide wow. to complete absolute detail.
So it had an opposite effect on you.
Yeah.
I'd lost
all touch on reality. I'd wow. lost all empathy. I wasn't me anymore. My ex Jacob, he was literally saying, I don't know who you are anymore. You know, you've literally, it's not even that you're being a dickhead or anything. There is just nothing about you. There is no emotion.
There's just no Dan in there.
Yeah, there was nothing. And it came to a point where I become convinced that it had to be on this certain day that it was going to happen. I'd pick my location, which was the Broadmarsh car park in Nottingham. And then 18th of April, 2017, I wrote a note on my computer, put some music on, put my slippers on and just walked out the door.
Wow.
I got on the tram, didn't even get a ticket. I had no intention of coming back. So as some people do say, oh, it's a cry for help, it's attention. It's not when you already feel like you've already said goodbye to everyone.
Right.
And at that point, when people say, oh, this is attention, oh, it's a cry for help, oh, you know, if you need to think about others and what you're doing, at that point, it's not a case of thinking about others, because you don't feel you're doing anything wrong.
No, you're already numb to
you're
others.
In a state yeah. where even the most stupid things feel extremely rational
right.
to you. And so I went up to the top floor of the Broadmarsh car park and I just sat on the edge of the car park and I was just waiting for the right time, waiting for a sign, signal, whatever, saying, okay, now's the time to go. And I started lowering myself over the edge and crowd obviously developed and people were shouting and saying stuff, and that alerted security up to the top of the car park, and they were talking to me, and then I just heard in my head just a voice saying, now's the time. And just as I was about to jump, I didn't realize there was another guard behind me, and he grabbed my shoulders and literally yanked me back.
Wow.
So instead of falling forward, I fell backwards and I was promptly handcuffed.
Cool. Yeah.
I was then pretty much, I was very, very defeated by this. And to be honest, it's sometimes it still plays on me, you know.
Yeah.
The whole thing of that day feels like it was failure.
Right.
I know to an extent it's not, but that will always be there. I got taken from the car park to a mental health kind of facility. And at that point, parents were called and I was like, okay, what's going on? And It was a very, very strange time. And they said they were going to get the aftercare team out. Within 3 days after that event, I had a major psychotic episode. It wasn't funny. It wasn't great at all. I was sat in my kitchen literally saying that I was going to slit my wrists, but I was saying it calmly. I said that I needed to walk out of the house. The police came and the police arrested me mm-hmm. in my house. And because they arrested me on my own property, they can't take you straight to a mental health facility. You have to go to the cells.
Okay.
So I was taken to the cells for 8 hours. I wasn't allowed my medication. So I was pretty much going cold turkey as well.
Of course.
And they put me into... And every time that I had to come out the cell to speak to a doctor, they were lovely to me. But any other moment, it was like I was a prisoner. It was like I was a criminal. And this was not good for my health.
Of course, no. Because you've not done anything illegal, per se.
Yeah.
You're just...
Unwell.
You're unwell and trying to find what you believe at the time is a release for you, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely going to feel like a release because I become convinced that my energetic body inside had become that strong that my physical body couldn't hold it anymore.
Right,
so it didn't feel like I was dying. It literally felt like it was release. But I went... Eventually, I was told, they said to me, right, how do you feel about going to hospital care? And I just said, do I have a choice? And they said, well, no, not really. But well, you do, but you don't. You can, if you go off your own back, you'll probably be in there a week, mm-hmm. a weekend rather. If we have to section you on a higher section, then you'll probably be in there 3 months.
Wow.
And I thought, well, either way, I'm going to be going. So off we go. And they didn't tell me really where I was going. All they said, I was going to a place called Bassett Law. I actually found out it was in Worksop. That place is depressing. And yeah, so we got there. And I can honestly say being on a mental health ward, on a locked mental health ward, is possibly one of the most terrifying moments of my life.
Wow, I bet.
Because you go from that point of looking out the window thinking, actually, I was one of them people just walking up the street to the point of, I'm now in here and I can't leave.
Yeah.
I went through multiple different diagnoses in there. 2 weeks in, they said that they were at 98% of borderline personality disorder. On my third week, when I had my consultant psychiatrist came off holiday, he did a complete U-turn. He actually turned around and said, you do not have a mental illness. You do not need to be here. I am discharging you with immediate effect.
Oh, wow.
So I ring my mum up. I'm like, I don't really know what's going on here. So she rings them up and they said, oh, no, we didn't say that. We said that he does have a mental illness, but it's not strong enough to be here. So now I've got the medical profession lying to me.
Yeah, saying something completely different. And that's only going to play with your head, isn't it? Yeah.
I'd also obviously been off work for 3 weeks and I had to ring my work up and say, I'm not coming into work. I'm on a mental health ward.
Of course.
Which is...
A difficult phone call.
It's a very difficult phone call to make. And eventually I had to go to a private psychiatrist, which cost about £350 for the session.
Wow.
And that's when I was diagnosed with rapid cycling, bipolar and borderline personality disorder mm-hmm. and put on shitload of meds, which obviously I'm still on now. But still, you know, I don't let it stop me doing certain things.
Of course.
You have to kind of power through. And
I suppose knowing exactly what you have, it sort of helps. It's just like there's a stigma against mental health, I think.
Absolutely.
I think, and although you know, it's the year 2019 and we're starting to learn that we need to lose that stigma, although there is still a solid one there. Mm. And just knowing what you have and how to be able to treat that,
yeah,
it's just the same as anything. If you have a cold, you know, to take some, you know, some tablets. If I've got a broken leg, I need a cast on my leg.
Yeah.
If you have a certain disorder, you need to have what helps that disorder. And sometimes I think people don't realize, because they can class it as an invisible thing that's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, you can't see it. It's not physically there, and you're not coughing. You're not losing your hair if you have, you know, or something.
Yeah.
You know, some people think, again, because of that stigma, think that it's make-believe. And in fairness, I think sometimes we are... This is getting quite deep now, even more.
Yeah.
We're sort of victims of our own sort of... our own beings as such. Like, some people have off days and they will say instantly, I'm depressed.
Yeah.
Well, no, you're just upset.
Yeah.
And or sometime someone would be really angry with their partner, but then they'll be like, oh, okay, I forgive you. And yeah. Someone will go, well, you've got bipolar. Well, no. And the problem is because of social media and because of this sort of, I'm going to call it snowflake society, yeah. and social media society of what we are now. We are all victims to this social media sort of thing. I think that although we're learning to accept mental health, we're also, some people could argue, are jumping on a bandwagon of mental health.
Oh, absolutely.
And someone someone could put, oh, I'm this, I'm that, I'm this, I'm that. Well, really, I don't think you are. You might, you know, I mean, no. I'm obviously speaking on an opposite side to what you can speak on in your yeah. past experiences. But again, that's got to be sometimes quite difficult when you have been through these legit times, you've had the help because you finally managed to be diagnosed with yeah. what you have. And then moving on forwards from that, you're the fun-loving person that we know and love today, not just in the scare industry, but as a friend. And it's some, and we all have good days, we all have bad days, yeah. no matter what sort of issues we have, mentally, physically, emotionally. But then you've got to sometimes see, well, hang on, these people on Facebook are saying that they're all depressed just because they couldn't get any sleep last night.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of doesn't help the stigma. Do you find that sometimes sort of, do you just sort of ignore that now because you're sort of used to some idiots on Facebook, or does that sort of affect you in that sort of respect as well?
I've had people make comments about my self-harm scars.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people make comments about some of the stuff that I write on Facebook in regards to mental health. People do... I know of... Obviously not friends with these people, but I know of some people who almost saw saying that they had bipolar or anything like that as almost like a new fashion statement.
Mm.
Like it's fashionable to be on Valium, fashionable to be on Xanax.
Unfortunately, we're seeing that sort of trend. Me and Hannah were talking about the other day that...
We're talking about it in regards to
gluten. Everyone's allergic yeah. to gluten. But yeah, it's a shame that we see that people sometimes think it's fashionable.
Yeah.
People don't know what it feels like to be depressed. And some people do, thousands, hundreds of thousands do. And they're the people that need the help and the support and the diagnosis. But you're only going to satirise the sort of the issue, really, aren't you?
I wish I didn't have to be on just under 1,000 milligrams of meds a day.
Mm-hmm.
That if I take ever so slightly at the wrong time, will knock me out for about 19 hours straight.
Wow.
They hit you like a tranquilizer.
Yeah,
it's not fun. Anybody that says, you know, oh, they want to be sectioned, then that is probably grounds for saying that you need to be sectioned, because no one should ever want that. Yeah. It's not fun. But I will say, and this is going to sound probably a bit controversial, that even though my standing of all the things I've had with mental health, I do not think that the asylum should have shut for that reason.
Oh, right. Okay. Because obviously you can... Yeah, that's a good topic to sort of join on there. There was a few years ago, if anyone's unsure of, maybe four or five years ago now, within the scare community... I think it was Asda that set it off, because they put out
a straitjacket
calling it a mental patient or something, yes. wasn't it? And there was a big uproar here within the UK about how dare you call it a mental patient. And I can sort of see things on that, definitely. And then a lot of attractions there were so many asylum-based attractions, mental hospital attractions, that kind of thing.
But it's a genre of horror.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's good to sort of get your viewpoint on that, in fact.
I mean, not being funny, but by rights on them grounds, Sanctuary should have followed the same fate.
Definitely, yeah. And you could argue
people in straitjackets that were completely off their head because they'd been fucked around by the medical profession.
Yeah, it's true. It just sort of skirts around.
It was the fact that it was called asylum.
Yes.
And I think the fact that obviously it's close to London,
mm-hmm.
so you've got a lot of people that want to try and make their mark, want to be known for some things, such as, oh yes, I was one of the people that was there when Asylum was doing all these wrong things, but we helped shut it down, dick.
Yeah, and it's true, and it happened in quite a few places. We used to see a lot of Asylum style attractions, and they are sort of gone and forgotten in a way. So it's good. Obviously, I can speak on it from my point of view, in the fact that I haven't had the demons that you've gone through, and I can go, come on, it's just horror. Granted, I can see maybe don't sell a costume that says mental patient, because a mental patient isn't someone.
They've been doing it for years.
But yeah, and
people have been dressing up about it, and then suddenly that one year, it was unacceptable.
If they'd just put straitjacket,
it would have been so much easier. Yeah.
Possibly psycho, but I think straitjacket would have been.
Yeah, so I think it was as don't get me wrong, Asda, please don't shout at me. It might not have been you, it might have been Smithies.
It was a UK
supermarket
brand.
Yes, yeah, other brands are available. But that's a good point, actually, to get your sort of viewpoint on that, and the fact that you just saw it as, although you could argue that the people arguing for it are people arguing for the right that they shouldn't be making fun of people like you, but you are. It's a little bit like the people that say certain people are racist for saying something, but hang on, if you're shouting about something about a black person or and they're white. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to say the wrong thing here.
At the end of the day, I think that a lot of us have lost touch with actually having the ability to laugh at ourselves.
Of course.
And people take things far too seriously now. I think, to be honest, you know the difference between if somebody's making a joke and if somebody is saying something with genuine hate and vitriol.
Yes.
And I think that's the point where people need to start becoming a little bit more aware.
Definitely.
To be honest.
And would you say that humour, along with the sort of the scare acting side of things of the community, you've got into it, sort of helped you beat
the
demons?
We're all sick fuckers in the scare.
That's the tagline. We're all sick fuckers in the scare industry.
As I look at the hurting card deck sat in the table.
True, there's a hurting card deck. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm not playing that. So try and sort of cap that little bit off, and we really do appreciate that you spoke to us about that. We don't want to exploit it, but we thought you're comfortable talking about it. We know that there must be people going through similar things behind closed doors, and there are people who are either scared or ashamed or frowned upon or just not believed about these issues. And obviously, we're just a niche little market of, you know, we're scare and theme park geeks. And the people listening to this, we love you all, but you're scare and theme park geeks as well. We are such a niche market as such, and we know we're niche, and we appreciate that we get so much support from you guys for doing what we do. But we wanted to sort of, one, first of all, Dan's an awesome scare actor. It's character development, the finale in the village, awesome. So it's great to talk about that. But it's also good to meet the people behind the mask as such. And I think this has been a good opportunity to sort of discuss the fact that we're all real people under it. And people do have demons. And you have been able to sort of fight your demons. And so it's a sort of topic off as such. Would you have any sort of... any word of advice to anyone listening to this now who legit do think that they may have, they could have a physical disorder, like I've got a bad leg, or they could have an emotional, they could be going through a breakup, or even further, they could have a mental health issue, such as yourself. They can do anything they can put their mind to, is what we're trying to say.
Absolutely. I honestly say, if you want, because we are so... into our world of immersion and storytelling. I kind of saw it as, when my characters are separate people to me, and if I was having a particularly bad day, it sounds really kind of cliche to say this, but I would literally go and go, okay, well, I'm having a bad day, but Bloodhusk isn't.
Yeah.
So you take that with your character, And this is why I say that when you become your character, when you're walking to the attraction, if there is any point where a guest can see you and you are wearing costume, you are that character. There is absolutely no excuse for walking with your phone, walking, you know, trying to act like you're not there. Just even down to your body movements, there are so many things that show that you are no longer this person. And once you start getting into that, then you can actually, it does help kind of differentiate if you're having a bad day or if it's not been, you're in a very low point, that you can power through. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to leave that person behind for a bit and we're going to be this person in this world and we're going to do this. But I will say, you know, if anybody just feels a need, like they just want to chat or anything like that, by all means, message me. I'm always happy to speak. It's not a problem.
Perfect, definitely. And we'll leave a few links for how people can get in contact with you below as well in our show notes. So
I suppose I should quickly say about how it actually saved me.
Of course, yeah.
Because I know I do waffle on quite a bit. Basically it was after I had been to the private psychiatrist, got my diagnosis and that I started doing volunteer work with Extreme Scream and literally spent near about my entire summer helping build sets and doing things like that. But it was being able to get, having that focus to create such an immersive experience. Yeah. I mean, I always knew when they said they wanted me in that church scene, I knew it weren't going to be a jump out, say a few words. I knew that I wanted that ending to be an actual theatrical performance.
Yeah.
I wanted people to go, okay, we've gone through a scare attraction. Oh God, what's this last building? Yeah. Oh, we walk in. Oh, okay, I'm in here for quite a long time. I wanted it to have a reason as to why you're in there for a long time. I wanted to create that theatrical experience that actually ended in that crescendo.
Yes, absolutely.
And I was going to say, from what I've seen, I believe that that was created.
It was one of the best finales ever. I remember the first time we went through it and we were there with quite a few enthusiasts that night and we all literally said, if that doesn't win an award, we're all walking. I don't know what from. Like the scare attraction industry, the world, just saying, if that isn't a winner, we're walking from that. It's not happening anymore.
And then you got a sneaky second run through the village, didn't you?
Well, you know the right people, do you know what I mean? You asked nicely. Yeah, we did. We had a second run.
And then Bloodhusk followed you out.
He did.
And caught Kate.
Miss Kate Monroe was terrorised all the way almost to the car park, I think.
Every time that Kate Monroe has come into contact with Bloodhusk, even, to be honest, at ScareCon, she has always been... She has always been on the side of his affections, shall we say.
There's always a soft spot for Kate, definitely. But you say so.
She has an infectious scream.
She does. She's a screamer. She is a screamer. But that's great. The fact that something that was able to, and it's something that you love as well. So even if there's people listening to this who aren't necessarily the scare actor or scare enthusiast as such, and they're listening to this because they're battling demons, mental health demons, just something that they love, if they can put the passion in that and they have an outlet. And you, I think I'd say that's what sort of helped you save you.
Oh yeah, definitely.
There was some sort of outlet for you to be able to go, oh, this is nice. This is nice. I can build this. I can do that.
It made me believe that after feeling for so long that I deserved bad things to happen to me, that I deserved for everything to go wrong. Mm. It made me actually feel like, even though I was heavily bullied at school and the teachers always thought that I would never amount to anything, that I could prove them all wrong and I could actually create something that I could get lost in and I could bring people in.
Definitely.
with me doing that. And to be honest, another attraction, and again, this is a bit of a touchy subject because it goes on to immersive horror theatre.
Mm-hmm.
When I was introduced into Faceless Ventures, I went for my first show, which was Interior, which was obviously the collaboration with Quietus Horror and Matthias. And that was a very psychologically based show. And there was one scene in there where I had to speak to a psychiatrist. And they actually said, you have to tell me 5 things you hate about yourself.
Oh.
And this was my first proper... anybody that's done proper immersive horror knows that it's not a scare attraction.
Yeah, it's definitely a different subgenre, definitely. Yeah.
And it is extremely immersive, and that's where I was. And I told them everything, absolutely everything in detail, like what I've mentioned on here. And there was a scene where the psychiatrist basically made me shout into a mirror and basically keep shouting, "You do," or something like, "You do not rule me," something like this. But it actually started to make me think, if I can withstand people that are trying, although they did it all in good taste, mm-hmm. to try and use my past to create a custom scare like it was done in Interior.
Yeah.
The fact that I managed to get through to the end, didn't safe word, and I fought my demons in a physical form, it did amazing things for me.
Wow.
And I know that some people say that, I mean, there have been some people that have said that because of my conditions, I shouldn't be going through them kind of things. But to be honest, I think with anything, it's knowing your limits.
Absolutely. And overcoming your fears, I guess, yeah. in a certain way.
I mean, to an extent, it's like, I know that my limit would probably be that I shouldn't do Cracked. Probably the most...
Potentially.
The most infamous show. It intrigues me. It heavily intrigues me. I think this is probably why I'm doing Scream Camp instead. Which, of course, you're doing as well.
Yeah, maybe. I've been roped into that one. Yeah, definitely. Hannah's not. She has more sense.
But there's just something different about that kind of immersion. And, of course, I am extremely looking forward to coming through your show.
Cruelty, next in 4 weeks' time. Absolutely.
Yes, because I'm actually coming... When I go that weekend, I'm actually doing Cruelty and, of course, Hurting Part 2.
Hurting Part 2 as well.
For my birthday.
What a lovely birthday treat.
For my 29th birthday, I decided to subject myself to Cruelty alongside Amber and Pagan as well. So... this will be interesting.
Definitely. Awesome. Sweet. So, I mean, that's great. Thank you so much for talking about sort of that sort of, let's call it that bubble of your life, because we can keep things in separate different bubbles, and that bubble of your life, although it's still there, it's nice to be able to push it back a little bit more, and that these other bubbles that have come around are now much bigger, and they're more fun, and it's all about, you know, family, friends, in the community, that sort of push that other bubble that comes in now and again, but you can throw it away.
Anybody that's afraid of going to ScareCon, not knowing what to expect. I was kind of in that same place as well. I didn't know if it would be clicky. It's not. If you like scare acting, if you like the scare industry, honestly, you need to come along to ScareCon because it is so inclusive. It's such a good experience. You get so much knowledge you would never think that you would get from it. You will have possibly some of the messiest nights of your life. But it is so, so much fun. And honestly, don't hesitate. You know, if you want to get a ticket, get them and come along, because you won't regret it.
And I've actually spoke to a few people. It is really nice that people sort of reach out to us. It's great, and we'll always say we'll see it ScareCon, because it's the done thing here now in the UK. Yeah. You know, it's got. So I started going in 2012, where there was like 50 or 60 people. There's now nearly 500. And there are some people who have some social anxiety issues, who are like, I don't know if I'll be okay with that many people, and everyone already knows everyone. What will I be involved? Yes. You know, don't get me wrong, it's sometimes crazy, and there's every year there's people I want to speak to that I just find, oh, I didn't get a chance to speak to him because I was speaking to 399 other people out of the 400. But as an overall consensus, you're right, Dan, and like you say, last year's ScareCon was your first, and most definitely won't be your last. It's so inclusive. Everyone's there because of the same reason, and that's why myself and Harry like it.
When the Village won.
It very, very well deserved one, that Scar Award.
Originally, I wasn't going to be going in Bloodhusk's outfit. I was going to be doing another one of my characters that I've made up, known as Glowstick Jack.
Glowstick Jack. Sounds ace.
He is a dead raver who killed himself by injecting himself with UV paint.
Okay.
So that was the plan. But because I had this all UV paints and everything set up, and then Phil rings up and says, by the way, Dan, I'm bringing Bloodhusk. I'm like, okay. Right, it looks like I'm wearing Hessian in a very warm
dress.
Then I realised I didn't have my trousers, so it was summer Bloodhusk, because it was Bloodhusk top and shorts. But I was like, shit, I've got no black makeup. How am I supposed to do the contrast? I'm supposed to do the lines. shit, I've got a Sharpie. Do I? Do I?
Oh, no.
Fuck it, yeah. I did all of my face contour, everything that night
with a Sharpie.
With a fucking Sharpie.
Wow. That's dedication, ladies and gentlemen.
And then the amount of alcohol that I must have drank that splashed out kind of cleared it off as well.
Yeah. Oh,
but
gosh.
I remember being sat there and hearing like every category, because we were nominated for six. I think it
nominated
was,
for a handful, definitely.
Yeah, I think it was like five categories with six potential chances, because obviously Voodoo and Village were up at the same time.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, we didn't get that one. We didn't get that one. We didn't get that one. Didn't get that one. I was like, shit, shit, shit. And then all of a sudden,
I've contoured with this for no reason.
As soon as Bolton said, I think we're going to have a stage invasion, that's the last thing I remember. I don't even hear him saying the Village. I just remember seeing the backdrop and our tables just going into uproar.
Definitely. I was. That was the best moment of the night.
We were at the back of the room as well.
You were right at the back. And it was insane. Like, and the good thing is that there is...
Praise the Harvest there as well.
There is a sort of collective of people who are on the panel for the Scar Awards, you know, the reviewers of Scare Tour. And but obviously there's also all the other enthusiasts and ourselves that go to all these similar attractions that are up for the running, and we were all like, I hope it is, I hope it is, I hope it... Yes, it's a bit like when you're watching the Brits and you're really hoping Adele wins because she's your favourite artist, I don't know. You have that sense of, yes, yeah, they've won, they should have, because I went through that and that was awesome. It definitely must have put the icing on the cake.
Oh, absolutely. And even more so when Hannah kind of stumbles over, didn't fall over the chairs, very close to falling over the chairs. Because again, we were right at the back near the windows, I think it was. Or it might have been a wall. It probably isn't windows there, but I think it was a wall. But it was very compact. It's like, can I borrow you for a minute? Yeah, sure. So I'm going to do an interview. And then I just remember...
trying to press the button.
I think we're on.
The morning after, I said I interviewed loads of people last night, but I may not have recorded any of it.
Yeah. It was fun trying to edit that episode. Definitely.
I can imagine. By the way, Kate, I'm trying to find you a special Gordon's Pink Gin bucket.
Yeah, Miss Kate Monroe, co-host of the show.
I mean,
got
I know
very
she
drunk
likes
on gin,
but to make herself into her own human airbrush.
Yeah, she did throw off quite a lot. Right, let's sort of wrap this on a high.
Yeah.
Let's wrap. And you are the newest thing. We need to speak to the other members actually on the show because they're good friends of the show, also patrons as well of the podcast. So thank you to Dom and Amber. But you're the newest member of Park Scares and Glitter. So I think what we should do is actually interview all three of you at some point, so we'll have a full episode with you guys, because it's always good for content creators to to look after each other. You know, we're all in it because we love the same thing, and unfortunately in other enthusiast groups there seems to be a lot of bitching and you know, things like that, and we don't want to do any of that. We are all in it because we either love screen parks or scare attractions or theme parks or roller coasters. So Park Scares and Glitter, tell the listeners, if they haven't come across it yet, what sort of thing you do.
Park Scares and Glitter, we do blogs, we do reviews, but we, one of the first, I believe, that really started focusing more towards the scare side as well as the theme park side, and then apparently a lot of people joined on. I mean, I've only done my scare acting for 3 years, but I feel I've learnt a lot in that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel I can make a very valued opinion on the attractions. I wrote a review for them for Unwrapped, I think it was, which was obviously my second Faceless Ventures show, and we ended, and they basically said, do you want to join us? And then before we knew it, me and Amber were planning a trip down to London where we did Seance, which was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And it still confuses me to this day. Still confuses me. And it was nice going through the dungeons with Amber as well. And there was a few other things we were meant to do, but they didn't exactly go to plan, which is a bit sad, but it is what it is. But I decided, I think after doing 3 years of scare acting, maybe this is the year that I need to actually just take some time out for myself, because I do give all my annual leave to 1 month. So it would be nice to actually have that moment to go around other attractions, see what other people do. I went to Valenterra with Andy Longmore, and he was right when he said that Scare Kingdom is unbelievably cursed by bitter cold.
Yeah, it's always cold at Scare Kingdom.
It's unbelievably cold, and I need to go around Manor Mortis with the lights properly on, because we did it by the glow sticks.
Yes,
of course. And that was it. I could see it was a beautiful attraction. It was like, I want to see more. And obviously then did Psychomantium. That was an experience. But yeah, so now I'm with Park Scares and Glitter. So we're trying to get more reviews put up, especially more around the immersive theatre.
Yeah.
So of course, when I do come to Cruelty, I will be reviewing you as well.
I'm getting nervous about it now, you know. The script's all wrote, we're all learning our lines. It's something that, not spoilers as such, but it don't expect too extreme.
No.
It's only a 3 rating, and if anyone's unaware of the rating system, immersive events do a 0 to 5. 0 is literally, like, you know, sunshine, lollipops, and 5 is you're going to die.
It actually says anything goes.
Anything goes. And we're a 3. I'd probably put it at a 2/3.
Yeah.
But it's, as far as I'm aware, it's something very different. I don't think people... I'm hoping you leave going, what the hell? What the... That was cool.
I'm a big one for actually getting immersed into the whole theme, not just the story, but actually leaving that reality behind. Because obviously, for those that don't know, it's done in a place called the Mexborough Business Centre, and it's a Victorian school, and all the events really take place in the cellar.
Yeah.
So it's like you are descending into this strange subterranean world of strangeness and madness.
It's a perfect home for Faceless Ventures.
Oh, it's definitely fantastic. Yeah, so I'm very much interested and intrigued on this, and then of course I'm going to be very, very sore afterwards.
Yeah, for in case anyone doesn't know as well, just sidebar slightly, Hurting is a card game made by the Haunting.net guys over in LA, and I did the first ever show here in the UK with Faceless Ventures back last year now sometime, and yeah, very different card game.
Yeah.
Poker is the least of your worries.
Do 50 press-ups. For every press-up you do not complete, you will be paddled.
Yeah, and that's Hurting. And that's coming back with Cruelty as well. So I think that's the perfect chance to sort of leave it there. We've spoken about the past, the present, and what you are next up to in the future. Dan, I just want to say a huge, huge thank you for talking to us on 2 levels, really. One, about Scares and what you do and how you create your characters and how you have acted and actually created parts of these attractions.
Just want to say one other thing.
Quickly. Yeah, go ahead.
For anybody that says that Wicker Man has no force and is a forceless ride, back row at night, Scarefest, you will not be disappointed. I've lost my hat to that ride.
So there we go, for any coaster geeks, definitely. And in fairness, at the end of the day, it does pack a punch. So Wicker Man, back row, left or right, or does it matter?
I've mainly always been on the right, I think. But either way, I lost my Extreme Scream cap.
Oh, no.
I tried to grab it, thought I'd done, and it literally went down that turn before it goes into the Wicker Man for the first time, and I just felt vroom.
Well, luckily Scare Track now do hats. I'm joking, we'll leave it there. Dan,
looking for Scare Track underwear.
Oh, so we got
spandex doesn't suit me, I don't think.
Okay, maybe we should do men's boxes. We'll move on to that. But yeah, Dan, a huge thank you for coming on, like I say, for multiple reasons. I hope the listeners, whether they're here just to learn a few scare acting tips, or whether they're here for a more deeper reason, I'm sure that everyone would have taken something away from this episode. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for the cake. Very tasty cake. Thank you. Well, you know what, I've lost a stone in a month. You're trying to make me put a stone back on in a month. For myself and Hannah's in the corner weeping.
Hi.
And from me and Dan, we'll see you on the next episode. Dan, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to Scare Track.
So there we go there, some deep words from our guest on today's episode of the Scare Trap podcast. A huge thank you to Dan Thorpe, one, for obviously talking about scare acting and his experience of creating his characters and developing his characters, but also on the flip side as well, talking more so about his personal life than anyone else has on the show, how he's managed to overcome some real dark times in his past. So Dan, it takes a big guy to be able to do that, so kudos to you, and thank you so much for doing it here on the Scare Trap podcast. It's something that we don't want to exploit whatsoever, but I think it's something that it can help a lot of people who may feel they're going through something similar, or may feel that they can't talk to anyone about certain things that have happened to them or certain emotions that they're feeling right now. So yeah, Dan, a huge thank you. Very brave for you to come here onto the Scare Trap podcast. And guys, on the other side of it, how awesome is it that he takes so much time and effort in creating his characters for Scare Attraction? When I was around his house, I saw notebooks about Bloodhusk. Guys, check out his poems. I'll do a link in the show notes below to his YouTube channel. There's some really good poems about his scare characters in there as well, and about scare acting overall. So guys, a huge thank you to Dan Thorpe for coming onto the Scare Trap podcast. So guys, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Scare Trap podcast. Just a couple of things before we go. If you did want to join us on our Patreon, then that would be fantastic, guys. www.patreon.com/scaretrack. But if you don't want to join us, that is completely understandable as well. We will be bringing you more episodes than ever for 2019. We have just been invited to the social media launch of the Orton Towers dungeon on the 23rd of March, so expect an episode from the opening day of the Orton Towers dungeon at Orton Towers, of course. We have a few more discussion episodes and a few more interview episodes coming up before ScareCon as well, guys, so we've got plenty of episodes coming up within the next 2 months. Speaking of the next couple of months, we are still running our competition. If you want to join in on our competition to win a fantastic Horrify Me book, guys, if you don't know Horrify Me is, then be sure to check them out on their website and social media. Some absolute, I'm going to say, the best horror photography in the world, not just the UK, Europe, in the absolute world. A brand new book that was released for last Christmas. Christmas just gone. It's a fantastic book full of some awesome, horrific sort of photography and modeling. So guys, that is the prize for our competition winners. Now, how to enter your competition? All you have to do is go to our merchandise store, where we have a new range of merchandise for 2019. www.smart-fx.co.uk, and I'll put the link below in show notes as well. All you have to do, guys, is buy yourself a little bit of Scare Trap merch. Now, we have things as small as beanies and pants for around a tenner, and we go up to t-shirts. Some of our t-shirts are currently 25% off at the moment. We have jogging bottoms. We also have hats and hoodies. All you have to do is buy a piece of merch. When it arrives on your doorstep, make sure you take a photo of you with the merch, send it to us on our social media channels, we'll share it, and then when everyone submitted their entries, we will pick one lucky winner out of a hat at random, and that winner will win the Horrify Me book. So guys, just click the link below if you want to get yourself some Scare Trap merch. One, it's on offer at the moment, so there's a discount of around 25% on most items. It's free delivery as well, so there's no cost on shipping. Also, you get yourself some merch and get to enter yourself into this free competition for the chance of winning a Horrify Me book. Guys, if you don't know how to submit it and you don't know where we are on social media, where have you been? We are on all the social medias, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search for Scare Trak and you'll find us there. Otherwise, you can email us directly, scaretrak@gmail.com. So guys, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Scare Trap podcast. Sincerely, a huge, huge thank you to everyone who listens to the episodes, who buys some merch, who shares and likes some comments, who joins us on Patreon. Guys, all of you in all those categories, thank you from the bottom of our heart for listening to this episode of the Scare Track podcast and indeed supporting the show. Guys, we'll see you next time. Bye bye.